All right, everybody, Gordon Holmes podcast coming up. But before that, I just want to take a second to thank everybody who has been using my Amazon links to do their holiday shopping and kicking off the holiday season right. I really, really appreciate it. You can save a lot of money by going to the Amazon.com Cyber Monday Week Sale event going on at robhasawebsite.com/Cyber Monday. Get all the best deals. Support Rob Has a Podcast. Enjoy the show. All right, everybody. I have a special bonus podcast for you here on your Survivor Week. It is always a pleasure of mine and hopefully of yours when we get to have this man on the podcast making his, what is this, your sixth consecutive season on the podcast at some point?
What is this, a pleasure of yours and, you know, hopefully everybody else?
Well, I hope so. I mean, if it's not the pleasure of the listeners, they won't listen to it.
That's true. I will hear about it. So, okay. So at least a pleasure of yours. We'll go from there.
Yes. Here we go. Here he is. It's Gordon Holmes.
Hooray. Are you debuting the new picture with me?
I did change my profile picture today. I changed the whole website over the weekend. That's what I did over my Thanksgiving. I edited commentary episodes and launched the new version of Rob as a website. Yeah, and I also debuted a new profile picture today. What do you think?
I like it. I also like the little picture of you on top of the website. Website looks great.
Oh, thank
you.
But
the picture of you at the top is just like, hey, what do you know?
Yeah. What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, and I usually ask Nicole before which is basically like the digital equivalent of do you like this shirt? Should I wear this shirt? Does this look stupid? And so she was sleeping all day today. And so I was then a little self-conscious about it and I didn't say anything. And then Stephen Fishback tweeted to me, and let me run this exchange past you and get what you think about this. Stephen tweeted to me. It gets me very self-conscious. He said that, did you change your profile picture? And I wrote back, progress, lateral move, or worse. And he said, first glance, though, I think progress, which is like two qualifiers in first glance and I think progress. So I feel like Steven didn't like it.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's really going to matter what Nicole says. So, you know, if people, you know, log on tomorrow and the pictures have changed, I think we'll know.
We'll know. Really, Nicole will have the final say.
that tends to be how most things tend to go in a married guy's life.
Final say on that. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So anyway, all right. So enough about my social media profiles and all that stuff. We're here to talk about Survivor Philippines. And
yes.
You, as we all know, cover Survivor and, among other things, for Xfinity TV. You do your weekly, your infamous power rankings, which you've been doing all the way back since Heroes versus Villains?
I believe Charlie Herschel and I started them in the middle of Survivor Tonkachines.
Whoa. I had no idea.
I know.
In its eighth season strong, Gordon Holmes power rankings.
Oh, man. feeling dated.
And have you ever won yet?
I absolutely have won. I defeated an all-star team, including you, during Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah, no chemistry.
Coach, and that's probably about it. I'm leading Kat Ederson from Survivor One World right now, so
Whoa.
That can of course
all right.
change.
All right. Well, I think we can't knock you anymore. If you know more about how Survivor is going to turn out than Kat Ederson, then who can argue with that?
Right.
Is it close? Is it competitive? Or are you just...
It is close. I actually jumped out to a solid lead in the first week, and she's kind of gnawing away at it since then. However many we have left, I think I have a two-point lead right now. So just kind of clinging to this tiny two-point lead. So we'll see how it goes.
It's anybody's game. It's anybody's game.
Here's actually, I was when a Survivor Samoa, I had a solid lead against Taj all season. And then as she started like roaring back, and it literally, there was only like the math only worked out that there was one way she could possibly beat me. And it happened. And when I met her at the finale, her husband, Eddie George, pulled me aside and he said, it was really nice of you to let Taj win.
Oh.
Which wasn't the case. But I I nodded and I said, hey, man, no problem.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so let's get into it, Gordon. Now, you have the distinct pleasure, and I know this is a pleasure, you have went on location this season to talk to these Survivor players beforehand. Has this season lived up to your expectations from when you went out there, or did you not have high expectations and this has exceeded your expectations?
Well, I try not to have too high of expectations for the seasons I go out on because they tend to suck. You know, Survivor Gabon was rough. Survivor Nicaragua was really rough. South Pacific was decent. I thought it was a good cast, but, you know, not the best season. This season is by far the best one I've been to. And we kind of got that feeling early on. You know, once you meet we hear the twist and we weren't really sold on it. Three tribes we thought could be decent to help stop a begonging or whatever. The three names that were coming back, you know, Penner we were excited for. Scoop and I was super excited for. He's someone I've been clamoring to get back for a long time. And Russell Swan, you know, a nice guy, but it felt like, you know, he's just the third injured guy to fill this out. And you know, we were there for the whole first 3 days. And, you know, we left with a really good feeling. You know, that Matt Singh vote was a bit of a shocker. Usually when you go to tribal, you have an idea who's going to go home. The challenge was a shocker. Everybody kind of thought that Calabaugh wasn't going to do well in the challenges, but, you know, they pulled it off. It was great to see them back in the water. It was great to see the location is, like, designed to the Caramoan Islands. Like, that's where survivors should be. It just, there's just, like, a million tiny green islands, beautiful water. So we were all really psyched leaving there. But with my history of, you know, attending sucky seasons, I try not to get my hopes up too high.
Yeah. And now, everybody who knows Gordon Holmes knows a very big baseball fan, your beloved St. Louis Cardinals. So you had to know Jeff Kent automatically. Like, did they tell the press when they're like, okay, this is Jeff Kent? Or they just tell you, hey, this guy is Jeff, and you guys figured out that it's Jeff Kent?
Well, the way it works is the night before the interviews, they hand us a packet of biographies. You know, we knew Pear, we knew Scoop, we knew Russell Swan was going to be
Scoop.
There. And they just handed us these 15 pieces of paper that had the people, their full names and things about them. Jeff Kent did mention that, you know, he was a former National League MVP and that he played for the Giants and all these teams. So we did know in advance. I'm glad we did because I would not have recognized him. Oddly enough, Lisa Welchel's bio didn't say anything. It just mentioned, you know, her living in Texas and her kids and the stuff she does for mothers and things like that. I'm actually proud of this. I was the one that was like, isn't that the name sounds familiar? Is that the woman from Facts of Life? And, you know, the CBS press representatives owned up to it, the PR people. So,
look at
yeah,
you.
Like that one, I guessed Jeff Kent, they gave us.
Yeah. I wonder now in future Survivor seasons if it will be like, there'll be like mistaken identity. Like every single person, you'll be like, hey, wasn't that, you know, and you'd be like going through like different sitcoms and like athletes. And it's like, wait, wasn't that person from Blossom? Wasn't that the older brother on Blossom? Not Joey, but the other one, wasn't it? Like,
isn't that Ricky Schroeder?
Yeah.
Is that the Ricker?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different people that, you know, you could just say, oh, wait, is that, you know, it could be very interesting.
They've been pushing for that Celeb Survivor for a long time, so it might be, you know, Celeb Survivor 80s sitcom edition.
Yeah, I think so. I think that could be a lot of fun to watch. Do you like the stunt casting?
Here's the thing. And, you know, everything I talk about eventually comes back to wrestling is, you know, back when wrestling was when they pushed it as real. If you came up to somebody and said, is wrestling fake? You'd get, you know, punched in the mouth just to show you, just because they wanted to show how tough it was. I love the idea of celebrity, like, you know, Jimmy Johnson was on the show and it kicked his ass. So, you know, whenever people talk to him, they're like, what's Survivor like? He's like, it is the real deal. Survivor, like, you're out there with nothing, you're starving and you're puking and you're yelling at monkeys and it's a disaster. So I love the idea that, like, Jimmy Johnson had that experience and it was a disaster. But I also love that a fan, like Jeff Kent, is a fan of the show. Lisa Welchel is a fan of the show. I love that they can go out there and play the game. And I thought they both did. Jeff Kent made some errors, obviously, and so was Lisa, to be honest. But I love the fact that they went out there ready to play and have done so well. I don't want to see, you know, 18 former celebrities on the island. But I think they've done a great job of showing, like, you know, Survivor isn't a joke. It's not, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Like, I think they've done a lot to kind of legitimize it in a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a fun thing moving forward, and you never know who they're going to bring in. It, you know, expands the audience, and I think it's good. I think this is a positive thing, and they did well this season to get two people who really wanted to be there and weren't there for the camera time.
Right. I think, and not to pick on Taj, but you know, she didn't know what she was getting into. And she did very well for herself, but I think it works better when it's somebody who's a fan of the show.
I think so. So then, Gordon, do you have any good or interesting stories that from your experience with any of these survivors, meeting them firsthand before the game started?
Well, we met the first 15, the non-returnees, on one day, and we're in this beautiful location. It's where the Ponderosa is. And, you know, I was in this gazebo. I didn't have to do film video, so I could just do audio. And the story I tell is Dawson. I had people sit on one end of the gazebo, and I sat on the other. There were all these framed certificates above us. And I sit her down, and I sit on my end. And then she's like, it's like we're on a date. She spins around and scoots up right next to me, which is endearing. And I thought it was charming. And we're sitting there talking, and maybe a minute into the interview, one of the certificates falls down and cracks her right in the head, shattered the frame. And I was like, oh man, they're not going to invite me back if I start, you know, knocking out contestants. And it was kind of a scary moment, but medical didn't have to be called in, and you know, she managed to get through it okay.
Yeah, good. And she managed to live to make it not only through Survivor, but to be one of the three people vying for the title of Survivor Jeopardy champion, Gordon.
Oh wow! I gotta tell you, man, with my Swiss cheese memory, I would not be good at Survivor Jeopardy. But she seems like she knows her stuff.
Yeah, some people are saying she's a dark horse. She could be a sleeper.
As long as she doesn't have to worry about, you know, flying objects cracking her in the head, I think she should be fine.
Yeah. Who else made a good impression on you while you were there? Who else had something interesting happen in your short visits with them before the game started?
Well, it's always kind of interesting. There's very specific rules about what you can say to them, because they obviously, you can't talk about the twist. You can't talk about, you know, which returnees are there at that point. You can't even say, hey, what do you think of that guy? Because, you know, they're all there. Like all 15 of them were in the same area. And, you know, they get to see each other, but they can't talk to each other. So you can't say, well, what do you think of the guy with a ponytail? Because that's kind of leading. But you can't say, what do you think of the cast so far? And, you know, every season, everybody, there's someone who sticks out, and you know that person is in serious danger. Like in Nicaragua, they were all like, you know, the girl with the cowboy boots, what's her deal? She's got to go. And that was Wendy Jo. And of course, she was the first person to go from her tribe.
Yeah.
This season, you know, it was definitely Angie Layton, who she is. It's almost like she doesn't exist. Like, you know how if you watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and they're like humans standing there, and then like Jessica Rabbit walks by? Mm-hmm. It's not right. Like, it just doesn't, something doesn't click right. That was Angie. Like, she just, like, perfect tan, perfect. Whoa. You know, if you were to let an animator,
I didn't think you were finishing that with tan.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on, this is a family show. But like, yeah, she just, like, it's almost like this person doesn't exist. And anytime you would say, what do you think of the cast, everybody had an opinion on Angie. And you know, everybody just assumed by looking at her, you know, dumb blonde. Whether or not she proved that true or false, that's not for me to decide. Yeah. But it's always interesting to get like people's pregame thoughts and to see how people, if they play how they say they're going to play. Like Pete's a perfect example. He's like, I'm going to find a girl on day one. I'm going to be like, let's run the table, and then we're going to go. And that's absolutely what he did with Abby. And you know, it kind of ended up screwing him in the end.
I know you talked to Pete as well, too, this morning. But, you know, I touched on this a little bit with him. But, you know, Pete showed up and he's like, oh, I got the Russell Hantz playbook. Here we go. Day one, find a cute blonde girl, get her under my arm. I'll tell her what to do the whole way. And he's sitting there and he's like, look at me. I got it all figured out. But, boy, did he pick the wrong girl. Like, this was not who anybody, Russell Hantz or anybody, had in mind with as the blonde girl who's just going to go along and do what you tell her to do.
Well, I hope this is a cautionary tale for all future survivors, because this kind of happened in One World, where they're not even at camp yet, and they're all like, we're in alliance, you, me, you, us, to the end. And that's exactly what happened. But you end up stuck with people you can't trust, you can't beat, you can't, like, it's just the game moves so fast these days. And I, like I said, I'm watching Marquesas right now while I run in my basement just to have something to watch. And it's so funny how it's like they are days into this game and they're like, well, I'm not ready to make a plan just yet. But the game moves so fast right now. And hopefully Pete will serve as a cautionary tale that that person on day one that you side with could be like legitimately insane. Like Abby, like you look at her funny and she's ready to slit your throat.
Or worse. You know, it is an interesting thing about having the tribes of six, because in the tribe of eight, there is a better chance that you will find the right five people to make your alliance with. You know, there's like, okay, well, that guy's crazy. That guy's looking at me funny. You know, that girl is out of her mind. But these other four people here, this is good. But in six, you don't really have that luxury. It's sort of like either I got to get along with everybody here, or if not, you know, I got to keep my options open. And for Pete, I think that keeping his options open might have been a better way to go.
Yeah, I think the person he wanted wasn't on his tribe. There was just, you know, RC's not the girl to, you know, take a backseat. Abby obviously isn't. You know, Lisa is, I think he wanted like a younger person to take under his wing that he could lead around.
Angie.
Whereas, you know,
he needed Angie.
Yeah, precisely.
With the perfect tan.
She has a perfect tan.
Yeah.
It's flawless. There's not a flaw in that woman.
Yep.
You're going to get me in trouble.
Tyson said he didn't care for her, though. That was not his cup of tea.
I'm more into brunettes, yeah, personally, but yeah, she's a nice girl. I don't know where to go with the sentence, but yeah, she's a lovely girl.
Yeah. Yeah, but that Pete needed, he was on a tribe with two very strong-willed, opinionated younger women and an older woman who was more willing to be led, whereas he kind of needed the opposite. He needed to be on the on Matt Singh, maybe in Malcolm's place, where he could have picked up Angie, and the more opinionated person is the older woman on that tribe. I think that would have been a better spot for Pete.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. What are you going to do? It didn't work out that way.
It's not the way the tribes shuffle.
Yeah. All right, so at what point are the new players saying, okay, there's 15 people here. We know there's got to be returning players in the mix here.
Well, that's something that, you know, you can't lead them. You have to say, what do you think's going on here? I think Jeff Kent was one of the few people who said, I think it's three tribes, and I think we've got three returnees joining us. Pete, I'm trying to just off the top of my head, Pete was like, I think this is it. I think it's just this 15. Malcolm was like, unless it's the theme of the season is men start down, I think we're going to see more men. Men start down. It's an interesting subtitle. It's no worse than Earth's Last Eden, but I think a lot of people had pegged that there were going to be more men. They didn't say whether or not. Many of them assumed it would be returnees. Nobody flat out said, you know, I think it'll be injured people returning.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a stretch.
I think it might have been Angie. I don't mean to pick on Angie, but she was like, "Oh, I've counted, and there's 12 people here, so there must be four more waiting." And the thing is, I got a ding. You can't correct them. You have to be like, "Uh huh, interesting. Yes, interesting."
Yeah. All right. Well, Angie is her. She has amazing answers. I would love to hear her talk about any number of subjects, and hopefully, we can do that at some point in the future on this podcast. All right, let's catch up to the present now and talk about what's going on here. And if you have anything else from your time there that's relevant, let's go ahead and bring it. Oh, actually, quick, one last thing. What happened in the press versus the Dream Team battle this season?
Well, we did the first challenge, which was the, you know, run into the woods, get the oars, you know, paddle out, untie the chest, bring it back to the shore, and then roll it and complete the puzzle. There was a lot of press there, so we didn't end up doing straight press versus Dream Team. The press group that I've been going with for a while. We were on the Tandang team. It was myself, Dalton Ross, Drew Morehouse, Mara Reinstein, Rob Moynihan, and then a dream teamer against two other teams, you know, Matt Singh and Calabal. But they had like about half and half dream teamers. And it was funny because there's a guy on the who manages, I guess, for lack of a better word, the dream team, Zach. He and I were talking beforehand, and I'm like, well, what do you think? And he's like, I got to tell you, I don't think you guys are the betting favorites. I was like, oh, great. Because we are old.
Right.
Put it that way. And we had less dream teamers. So I'm a big believer in that. I think the returnees have an amazing advantage when they play newbies. And I think a lot of that has to do with how you approach challenges. I mean, I remember the first time I did a challenge at Gabon, I was so like, I didn't want to embarrass myself in front of Jeff Probst. There were all these cameras here. There's like 100 people watching. The dream team's going to murder us. I was just scared to death. And even when Jeff Probst goes, press team ready, survivors ready, go. And you're like, Jeff Probst just said survivor. He says that all the time. Mm-hmm. You get all excited.
You're like,
you
Dawson.
Concentrate. I literally was. I was like Eric Reichenbach. I was like, is that the last name?
Ice Cream Scooper Eric?
Yes, yes. He's like, that's Jeff Probst right there. That was me. So we got slaughtered. So then each time you do it, you get used to it. It's to the point now where I was at the test run for the second challenge, the one with the sleds. I literally walked from there to our challenge, put on a belt, and went. I didn't see cameras. I heard Jeff, but only because he was running behind us and making fun of us. But you really can tune that kind of stuff out, and it really helps. Like it's literally all business. And you know, we were trying to think of little ways to best use, you know, do the challenge. Like, you know, Dalton and Drew are amazing swimmers, and Mara, her and I ran the first leg. We both run a lot, and I had had the idea. I was watching Survivor Palau. Is that the one where they do the one where they're tethered together?
I don't know.
Oh no, wait, I'm sorry. Survivor Micronesia, the one where Chet got dragged around by the rope.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yes.
So I remember watching that, and I'm like, why don't they hold hands? So when they put the tether on us, I said to my partner, I'm like, let's hold hands. That way we can lead each other. If one of us falls, we can pick each other up quickly. One person won't get a lead too far ahead. And what we found out, so we did that. We ended up with a huge lead. We decimated the other team. So very proud. When it was over, I was talking to Zach, and I'm like, he said, holding hands. Like, we were all kind of looking at it and kind of wondering, you know, why hadn't anybody done that before? So that was kind of my proud, you know, survivor moment. So yeah, we gave them a solid lead. Dalton and Drew did a fantastic job. I don't know if I'm a good enough swimmer to do what they did. Mm-hmm. Like the distance pushing that crate back, they were just exhausted. And then it's even little things like when we went to go get the crate, like kicking off your shoes. So that's not a problem. You couldn't lift the crate because it was waterlogged. So we quickly thought to flip it end over end. And we ended up winning, which means we got a case of beer, which is all we really care about at location anywhere, is the beer.
I didn't know Dalton Ross was such a good swimmer.
Dalton Ross, his nickname is actually Dolphin.
Dolphin Ross?
Dalton Ross, you get the guy in your water, and it's within a second he's in it. Like it's amazing. Like,
wow, Aquaman, yeah. Ross, who knew?
The kid can go. Like he can swim. So like, yeah, the second we knew it was a water challenge, you know, he was our go to guy for that.
Okay, good. Well, that's an interesting tidbit. All right, well, let's talk about this game where we are now. And what happened this week? Pretty exciting post-merge here. You know, we had the two crazy episodes back-to-back where RC and Jeff Kent ended up going home. Then we sort of had where Tandang sort of, finished the self-destruction here, where then Mike Scoopin ends up going and voting out artists, joining up with Malcolm and Denise and Penner and Carter. And then this week, you know, a last-ditch effort by Pete and Abby Maria to get Scoopin to come back over, which it looked like he just might do, but he didn't end up doing it. So now we have basically this six-sum where it's hard to really know who's calling the shots, plus Abby Maria, and sort of a wide-open final seven.
Right.
So
that's it. A very good synopsis.
That's a synopsis. So what are we expecting to happen here? I guess, or are we looking to see now Scoopin, Lisa, Malcolm, Denise, final four here, and pick off first Abby Maria and then Penner and Carter? Seems too cut and dry.
It does. I got to admit that when Scoop and Lisa went to Penner and asked for the final four and Penner didn't take it, That kind of blew my mind. And Penner is too smart. like just like whenever you talk to Petter, like the guy, he operates on several levels at the same time. It's very impressive. And I'm sitting there watching it, and it just, I didn't have a DVR because I was at my parents' house, and it blew my mind. I wanted to rewind it. Like, what am I missing? And all I could think of is, does he have designs to get to the end with Abby Maria somehow? Because obviously, you know, just if you're playing that kind of a game, Abby Maria is the person you want to go with. Mm. It seems like she can't possibly get any jury votes. That's the only reason I could think of why he wouldn't agree to go with Scoop and Lisa. Because, you know, Carter, you know, he's kind of floated along. He's won challenges, but, you know, he hasn't been wowing anybody with his gameplay. Scoop, I kind of, you know, like he stabbed like all the Tandangers except for RC, even RC actually, probably think he stabbed them in the back. So he might seem like someone who wouldn't be too hard to defeat either. And Lisa, you know, she seems kind of wishy-washy. I think someone like Penner might be able to carve her up in a final tribal. So all I can think, the only reason I can think of is that he wants to be with Abby. What do you think? I don't know.
It makes sense what you're saying, but
I'm bum puzzled.
Yeah, you should be bum puzzled, but it makes sense what you're saying, but I just don't get the sense that he wants to do that. Go back and look at that Jeff Kent tribal council that Penner votes for Abby Maria at that point just because she made him so mad. And if that's how he was thinking, I don't think he's had this massive change of heart. I mean, he described her to Lisa as one of the bad people. Going back to that famous storyteller speech, what do you want your story to be? Do you want to be with the good people or with the bad people? And he calls her one of the bad people. I don't get the sense. I mean, I think Penner wears his heart on his sleeve. And so I don't think he has a secret plan that we don't know about. The great thing about Penner is that he can express to you exactly what he's doing. So if he had some mastermind plan, I think he'd be telling it to the camera and we'd be seeing it.
But Penner has been a dead man walking since day one. Like what could it hit? Like, it just blows my mind. Someone says final four and there are seven people left in the game and there's four of you. Like the math works out. And I would like you to do a commentary of Survivor Philippines in your Penner voice. It's hysterical.
Do the commentary as Penner?
As Penner. I can't wrap my brain around it. And Penner, and I would hate to go to the end of Penner because I think everybody respects him. I think everybody appreciates that he's been a dead man walking for a long time and that he keeps fighting back. Like he should have been voted out like two or three times. And I think people respect that. So I don't know what he's thinking, why he wouldn't take an easy road to the final four.
What I'm wondering here with Penner is, has he gone full Sandra on us? Has he basically adopted anybody but me? Just give me three more days. I'm not going to worry about, you know, going that far or going to the end. The only vote I care about is the one that's coming up. I'll win an immunity here if I have to, but as long as it's not me. And if I can get close enough to that, to the end there, I think I could be a compelling case against one of these other people in the end.
See, I think he's a smart guy. And you can't just think another 3 days when someone's offering you another 9 days.
Yeah, for whatever reason, he didn't want to go along with it. Now, maybe he has other allegiances. Maybe he feels like he's with Carter and Malcolm and Denise, and then he doesn't want... if he doesn't trust Lisa and Scoopin, if he thinks that they're then going to go back and tell Malcolm and Denise, oh, well, Penner's with us now. Penner said that he wasn't working with you guys. Maybe if he's just worried about the stories getting crossed. I mean, I think for Penner, the whole thing is he doesn't want to be seen as being a sneaky guy at all this season. I think so. That's really what he's concerned about. And so I don't think he's against making a move, but I think he's certainly against being labeled with his perception, oh, Penner's up to something.
Yeah, I think you could be right on the Malcolm Denise thing, maybe if they didn't show us something. It just, like, that move is just, it screams of we're not seeing something.
It does paint Penner in a light like he doesn't know what he's doing in the game. And I've done two podcasts with Jonathan Penner before, previous to this season, and I listened to the second of those recently. Jonathan Penner knows how to play this game, so I don't believe that all of a sudden he just doesn't, you know, he's somehow forgotten everything he knows. So I kind of feel like, is it something we're not seeing, or he just feels like if they think I'm being sneaky the way this season has gone, where they're eliminating all these strong players, I'll be the next target.
See, but I also think that this is a season of, it seems like, a lot of strong strategists, or at least people who see themselves as strategists. And maybe those are people who will respect that. Like someone like Pete will respect that, like, you know, Penner didn't flat stab him in the back. But, like, again, he was a dead man walking for a long time. So I don't know, man. I'm at a loss for this one.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting to see. Now, what do you think about Scoopin's move? Did you like his decision to not flip at this point?
So if Scoopin doesn't flip, and so if Tandang sticks together, they would have needed another vote. It was an 8. It was an 8 vote, right?
There were 8 people, yeah. But it was a 3-3 split. So him breaking the tie would have made it a 3-3 tie, and then they had the immunity idol. So they would have gotten out somebody from the other side.
I kind of feel like Scoopin has, like, do you ever have, like, a friend who is, you know, a little crazy or weird or whatever? And, you know, it's just, okay, here's an example for you Red Sox fans. You know, Manny Ramirez, when he played for the Red Sox, you know, people loved him. He was a little crazy. Whenever he did something crazy, that's Manny being Manny. You could write it off like that. Now, I couldn't go into my office and, you know, punch my boss in the head and be like, that's Gordon being Gordon. That just wouldn't fly because I don't have that reputation. Right now, I feel like Scoop, you know, with the injuries and the, you know, the back and forth, it's almost like whenever Scoop does something, it's, you know, it's just Scoop being Scoop. So I kind of feel like he's one of those people that, you know, can waver a bit and have it not count against him too much. You know, that being said, if he gets to the end with, you know, if he get with, like, Denise or Penner, I think those people are gonna beat him. I think his best bet was probably sticking with Tandang. Of course, now that I say that, he's in a Final Four alliance. But the question is, can he beat Malcolm? Can he beat Denise? Can he beat Lisa? I don't think he can.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what I had said originally for Scoopin and Lisa was I thought they were in a good spot with Tandang until 7, then pick up Malcolm and Denise and vote out Carter and Penner first. I mean, basically, if things carry through the way it's looking like, they're going to get to that point anyway at 4 with those guys. But the move is going to be then for when it gets to 5, who is going to pick up the swing vote and be able to break up one of those twosomes. As you'll see famously in Survivor Marquesas, there's a great example of that at Final 5 there. And it brings up a good point. Is this going to be a Final 2 or a Final 3? Because if it's Final 2, Final 5 is huge.
Right.
Usually, you know, if you screw up Final 5, then, or if you get it right, Final 4 is a foregone conclusion. If you screw it up, you're headed towards a 2-2 tie, making fire, and that's just, you know, it's not clean at all for a Survivor player. You don't want that, ideally. It's all comes down to Final 5. Survivor All-Stars, another great example of the Final 5, where you have 2 twosomes and then a swing vote, in which was, at that point, Big Tom. And Boston Rob turns Big Tom and Rupert on each other and is able to vote out Big Tom at that point, which actually sets up a weird sort of 2-2 tie there anyway, but then they bring over General Lewis. But whatever. Final 5 is what this is all going to come down to if it's a Final 2.
Has there been any definitive, is it a Final 2, is it a Final 3? Because I don't know.
What do you think? I think it's going to be, just based on how many episodes we have left. I mean, let's count it out here. So we have this Thursday's episode, which will take us down to, it's, you know, Final 7, which is always a big swing. So Final 7 here could really shape things up. So that'll get us down to 6. Then we have another episode after that, which will get us down to 5. And then the last Wednesday before the finale would leave us down to 4. So, I mean, I feel like it would be a slow 2 hours to get down from 4. Like, there's no Redemption Island. It's not like somebody's coming back into the game unless we have a non-elimination survivor, which I can't imagine that we would do something like that.
they get to the mat, and I'm sorry, you're the last team to arrive.
But
I just feel like every time I talk to Probst, you know, I'm a huge proponent of a Final 2, but he's always kind of adamant that Final 3 is, you know, the way it is from now on.
Well,
but I'd love to see it.
Maybe he's getting ready to pull a big switcheroo on you.
Yeah, maybe I would be all for it.
But it would be a final two with a jury of nine.
Right, right. That works out.
So that would, they've never done that before.
So as opposed to a final three with a jury of eight.
Yes, which seems very muddy. Which I guess they have done that before, but seems muddy.
But there weren't any like post-merge evacuations or,
yeah,
you know, someone quitting or whatever that would warrant that. So the math doesn't work out for me.
The math doesn't work out. I'm leaning towards final two, jury of nine.
That would be sweet.
That would be very exciting. I would like to see the return to the final two. And what it would do, even if they only did a final two every, you know, five, eight seasons or whatever like that. Like, oh, is it a final two or is it a final three this season? I mean, they haven't done final two since Token Sheens. So it would be interesting to see if they, you know, just brought it back.
Well, I feel like the whole three tribe thing was done to shake up the begonging that was going on recently. So maybe this final two will also, you know, help make people rethink what they're doing in the future.
Well, I think that also the final three was a big part of why there was begonging or nobody wanted to make a move. Because if you're Sabrina and Chelsea last season and you're with Kim and somebody and Troy Zan's like, hey, come on, vote with me. You know, it's like, well, you know, I'm probably going to be in the final three. All I need to do is get to the final three. I don't need to make a move at six or whatever because mm-hmm. I'm probably going to be in the final three. If it comes down to final two and then you have Sabrina and Chelsea both saying, wait, am I really the one with Kim? Or am I really the one with Kim? Maybe I'm not the one with Kim. Maybe I need to go out and do something on my own. I think that is a really big difference in why we've seen these people, you know, Albert and Sophie don't make a move and go along with Coach all the way to the end. And, you know, Natalie and Philip both go all the way with Boston Rob because they're not concerned that, you know, they know they're both, there's going to be a spot for both of them at the end, even though Natalie didn't, she thought she was with Ashley or the other, is that her name? Andrea? What was it, the other girl?
You're asking the wrong guy, Rob.
Yeah, whatever. But so it's like, no need to make a move because, hey, there's going to be three of us at the end. And you can take, you know, an alliance of five people and Coach could be like, oh, you know, Edna and Rick, you're with me in the final three. And it's basically, if it's a final two, you know, it's much tougher for Coach to go up to every single person in his tribe. Hey, I got a final two deal with you. I got a final two deal with you. I got a final two deal with you. People have to make moves if they really want to be in the finals, as opposed to if it's a final three, it's, you know, it's the difference between, you know, having plus two versus a plus one. It's a tough pick if you only get to pick one person.
See, but I would rather have them tell them in advance. Because wasn't it Micronesia True. Where they thought it was going to be a final three and then at the last minute, surprise, a final two? They should let them know at the beginning so that, you know, what you just described can take
place.
That
is a very fair point. And maybe it's not so much for them, but it is for the future seasons. Although the people on Survivor 26 that they already filmed that, they wouldn't even know. So the soonest you would see the repercussions of this would be Survivor 27. So yeah, you're right. They should have, if it is going to be a final two, they should have told them on day one.
Right.
Hey, final two. Don't think that you can be bringing a bunch of people to the end with you. You got to make sure. Am I in the final two?
Hey, guys, these are the strategies we're getting tired of. So knock it off.
Yeah, knock it off. Okay, no alliances on the first day. No groups of five. If we see that, we're gonna come in and break it up. If you make an alliance of five people, we're going to switch you, okay?
It should be like a picture book. This is Pete. Pete made an alliance with Abby.
Yeah,
Abby was crazy.
She was crazy.
Don't be Pete.
Yeah, don't be Pete. So handicap this for me. Who is the favorite here to win this game here as we're getting down to the end?
I guess if you take the final seven and you list them in order of who could beat who.
Sure.
And, you know, you can't beat anybody above you, but you can beat whoever's below you.
All right, you're Mr. Power Rankings. Let's do this. You're Mr. Power Rankings. Let's do this. Who's at number seven?
Okay, at number seven right now, the person who can't win the game is Abby.
That's right.
At number six, the person, I'm thinking Carter.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody respects Carter's game right now.
Yes. And right now, these would be the two ideal
people. I
think
you have a lot of strategists, and if he goes on an immunity run, that won't impress anybody.
Yeah.
Okay, so five. I'm leaning towards Scoopin' here. Just because, you know, some tent, like, I mean, it's definitely not getting Artis's vote. RC might have some bad blood. You know, Jeff Kent, you know, probably like didn't. I'm getting my votes confused just because I feel like Scoop goes back and forth.
Scoop
every week.
Did flip
Scoop
on Jeff
responsible
Kent.
For Kent going home?
Yes, he was. And Jeff Kent, in his exit interview, at least with me, he was bitter towards Scoopin'.
Okay, so I can see Scoop having trouble winning a jury. Above him, I'm putting Lisa Welchel because I think she's done a good job. First of all, I think Abby has done, like, you know, you can't let people out of your alliances as easily as she has. When she says, I don't trust you, when she yells at people that she thought vote away they didn't, it kind of lets them turn on you in a way that says, well, I did this because you did that, which makes it understandable, and then you have less of a foot to stand on, you know, when you're complaining when you're on the jury. So I think Lisa can get away with like walking away from Abby and Pete without getting too much grief over it because, you know, Abby let her. So I think Lisa's still in decent shape. Above her, I'm going to put Penner, Malcolm, and Denise are the three I don't want to go to the end with, just because, you know, Denise and Malcolm have that Matt Singh story on top of, you know, Denise is just a challenge. Like, she's just a challenge machine. Same with Malcolm. Malcolm's done a fantastic job. I don't think they've really rubbed anybody the wrong way. They haven't shown up getting arguments with people. You know, whenever I do the word association, everybody seems to, you know, really like and respect them. Same with Penner, where, you know, maybe he doesn't get along with everybody, but, you know, I think people are going to respect him, you know, scratching and clawing. So if you put a gun to my head, maybe I'm going Malcolm third, Penner second, and Denise first.
Yeah.
And if you ask me again in 5 minutes, that might be
different. I think you've got Penner way too high on this list. I think that
really,
I think I agree with just about the whole list, but I think I've got Penner at five, in between the Lisa Scoopin twosome, but above Carter. I think that's where Penner goes right now.
Okay, who on the jury do you think isn't voting for Penner?
Well, I don't think that Penner has a shot to make it to the jury. That's forget like who is, you know, unless your
no,
whole
this,
list.
This doesn't have to do whether or not you can make it there.
Oh,
it's
I
just
was talking
like
about
if you were in the final three,
yes.
You can't beat the people above you, you can't beat the people below you.
Okay, so I guess I have no problem with Penner being that high on the list of, I thought we were talking about winning the whole, you know,
no,
chances
no, no.
to win the game.
I think Penner blew it last week when he didn't go pick that final four.
Yeah.
But I think if he could have gotten to the end, he would be very tough to beat.
I don't know. I'm really starting to think that the reason why Penner said no to this deal is just because he's trying to play this game this time of I'm just going to, you know, zen out. I'm going to, you know, take a page out of the Ozzy book. I'm not going to, you know, come up with a million and one strategies here. You know, I'm going to talk my way out of stuff, but I'm not going to be overly strategic. And this is my best chance to get to the end because if you go back to Cook Islands, where he was overly strategic, everybody hated his guts the whole time. And he was flipping and he was going from one side to the other. And I think that he said to himself, this is not a winnable way to get to the end of the game. I cannot win playing the way I've played before, and he's trying something new. Well, now I don't know if this is going to work, but this is the only thing I can come up with. In especially, you know, listening to him in the last podcast I had done with him, I feel like that's got to be what he's thinking.
But that just blows my mind because somebody says final four and there are seven people left. It just. I don't know. I keep saying I have no explanation for it, so I will go with
yours.
But
maybe he wants to keep his options open, where he says no to that, but if he says yes to Final Four and then he doesn't go along with that, then it's like, hey, Penner, you screwed us. I mean, I watched a couple of years ago one of the episodes from Cook Islands, like after everybody, like he mutinies on them, and you got like Adam Gentry is like, Penner, we hate you. You know, everybody's just like coming after him. And so maybe he just feels like I cannot break my word. If I want to win this game, I can't be seen as a guy who's breaking his word this late in the game. I want to keep my options open. And maybe that's how he feels like he'll get to the end and win.
Maybe, but to jump back to Nicaragua, they made it seem like Marty Piombo voted out Jimmy Johnson because he was famous. And that's not the case. The reason Marty voted out Jimmy was because he couldn't trust him. He kept trying to align with him, and then Jimmy kept being like noncommittal. And that's when someone doesn't know where you stand or where you're going in the future, that's when you make people nervous, and that's when you know, they have to do something to get rid of you. And if Penner's doing what you're saying he's doing, it, I think it's going to cost him.
Yeah.
I think he had a great shot if he got the final three, but I don't think he's going
to
make it.
And you don't
far.
Have to tell me about voting people out for being non-committal, as you will refresh your memory when you listen to the Survivor, the Amazon commentary.
Yes, I'm very excited for that.
Yes, you'll be running twice as fast on the treadmill when you are hearing this commentary.
Did we talk about okay. So, yeah, I watch old seasons of Survivor in my basement while I run on the treadmill. I was going to do Amazon next. I just finished up with Heroes versus Villains, and Rob said, no, wait, we've got
a commentary
coming out with myself and Jenna Maraska. And so now I'm watching Marquesas because that commentary is not quite ready yet. If you want to make me feel better about this, wait, you can tell me how many Survivor voices you do during this commentary.
Well, I don't have a ton of Survivor Amazon impressions. I do Butch and I do Dave Johnson pretty extensively. There's really, you know, Roger is sort of like, it's just like, you know, sort of like a generic old guy. Sort of like, these kids and they're crazy. You know, Butch is
now,
like...
Now, does Jenna do a Heidi Hamels?
She does not do many impressions. You know, tough people get upset if you do a Christie impression, so we're gonna stay away from that. She's not really an impressionist. She does Butch, I think, a little bit, but Butch is great. You know, did a little bit of Butch, which is like, okay, what we got here, we got to go out there, we're gonna go in the woods, and we're gonna go and we're gonna get some good, clean, burning wood. That's right. That's right, Rob. That's right, Gordon Holmes, because that is what we are here to do. It's very good. And Dave Johnson is just like, oh, well, you know, hey, sports fans, we got to go out there and kick some butt today. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know what's going to happen, but we're going to do it anyway. And I know we're going to see how the dream team ducks and going to go out there. So that's kind of Dave Johnson. But
I like to think you just sold a lot more of those comments.
that many impressions. Just think if, you know, it could have been on a season with more people to do good impressions of.
I'm just picturing like, you know, like those old those music collection commercials where we've got Rob does the classics, Rob does Jonathan Penner,
well,
Rob Sesternino,
yeah, not to give
Rob Mariano.
Well, not to give anything away, but when we get to the reunion, we do get to see some Survivor alumnus in the audience, so we have some bonus impressions from some Survivor veterans that are in the audience of the Survivor Amazon finale.
I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Do you want to segue into Survivor Hall of Fame talk a little bit here?
Absolutely.
Okay. So Gordon Holmes, set up the third iteration here. We're inducting the third ever class into the Survivor Hall of Fame, the 2012 class of Survivor Hall of Fame.
All right, so let's see. If you don't know the deal, Xfinity TV hosts the Survivor Hall of Fame. In 2010, we inducted the inaugural class. We inducted five people: Parvati Shallow, Boston Rob Mariano, Richard Hatch, Russell Hance, and Sandra Diaz-Twine. The vote is made up 50% of a voting committee made up of myself, Jeff Probst, members of the Survivor production staff, member of the Survivor press, and then the other 50% comes from fans like you. In 2011, we did this again. We invited the current class to vote, you know, Russell Hanson, Parvati Shallow, et cetera. We ended up inducting Ozzy Lust,
is that
Tom
how you
Westman,
say that?
And Ceri Fields. Doing this off the top of my head.
Yes.
We're doing it again. Same deal. 50-50 vote between the fans and the executive committee. You can vote on Survivor Hall. That's our Twitter account, Survivor Hall. Also, Survivor Hall of Fame on Facebook. And there's a Survivor... it's survivorhofvote@gmail.com. You can send your picks there. And we're opening up to everybody is eligible, with the exception of the people in the class of 2010 and 11, who I'd already mentioned, as well as people who are on Survivor Philippines are also not eligible.
Yes.
So, you know, go to twitter.com/survivorvote, or sorry, Survivor Hall, and tweet us your picks for this year.
Okay, here's I want to talk about this with you, because I am interested in the evolution of how the Survivor Hall of Fame works. Now, you started in the first year. Then there were, because it's an evolving thing. It's only in its third year. So then you, and then after last year, you modified some of the rules. So some of the rule changes that came into play after last year was the survivors from the current season. Like last season, a year ago this time, we had Ozzy and Coach were both on the season. And Ozzy and Coach did well in the voting. And there's a bit of a recency bias, not to take anything away from the enshrined Ozzy. But that was one of the things you changed going to this year. And I applaud that decision. I think that was a good decision.
Well, my goal is to make this, I mean, it's really, this Hall of Fame is, it's not for me. It's not for Jeff. It's really, you know, just for everybody who enjoys the show. And I kind of hated the fact that Ozzy, that people could count that against Ozzy, that South Pacific was airing during the vote. That's why we made this rule. You know, as the person who saw the vote counts from 2010, I can tell you Ozzy was very close to being in the inaugural class. So that's why I can say with a lot of confidence that, you know, if he had not been on South Pacific, he would have been in anyway. So, you know, the reason behind this rule was to eliminate that kind of confusion in the future. And then, you know, honestly, when I was out there in March for the taping, when I saw Petter was coming back, Scoopin was coming back, Swan was coming back, I was kind of glad because, you know, these are guys that, you know, maybe after the season will be good Hall of Fame picks, but right now probably not on that level. So
yeah.
I don't think it hurts much this season.
But I think we could take a look at the Baseball Hall of Fame, where you have to be retired for 5 years. And again, you know, there's no survivor who's ever going to retire. When I did my podcast with Boston Rob, he says, "I'm not going back. I'm done." You know, would I bet my life Boston Rob isn't going to be on Survivor for a fifth time? I don't think so. I would bet anything somebody who's already inducted into the Survivor Hall of Fame will be back on Survivor at some point. So it's tough to do it that way. But I do think there should be, you know, a one-year waiting period from Survivor appearance to being inducted into the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Well, the thing is, I can add all the rules I want, but that won't make people listen to them.
Oh.
Because we have this page of all these rules, and I still get, you know, like, you know, people voting for Boston Rob, people voting for, you know, people voting for Penner. So, you know, and then some people get pretty upset about it, but we just don't
all
count
right.
those votes.
So
we'll see how it goes.
Now, this might be the Survivor Hall of Fame think tank. I don't know if that was what you were bargaining for. I think we need to standardize the Survivor Hall of Fame balloting. I think we're too all over the place, Gordon. I think you can vote on this page. You can send a tweet to vote. You could send an email. What is this, Florida, Gordon?
Well, we will have the results sometime in June, and we're all very excited. I've thought of like a bunch of different ways, like maybe have the executive committee nominate people, but then, you know, is that fair if they're leaving off somebody the fans are really behind? And, you know, is the executive committee too powerful? Like these are all things I'm open to discussing. And, you know, I kind of do like a postmortem on my personal blog when this is all said and done. So, you know, if you have any thoughts or comments, like I'm absolutely open to them.
Good.
You know, you can send them to me on Twitter at Gordon Holmes. So, again, it's a work in process. It's a fluid Hall of Fame.
Okay. Now, and I like that, you know, you're open to these suggestions. Now, you said something, I think, at the start of the voting where you said you told people to vote early and often. Now, does that mean you're allowed to vote daily? How exactly does that work?
We haven't put a cap on it. It hasn't been abused yet, so maybe we shouldn't discuss this. But people have been very good. Like, there's been a few, okay. Like, where you get, you know, like, five identical ones in a row.
Yeah.
But again, like, it all seems to even itself out. Like, it just seems like there are so many. Like, we've topped what we did last year already. It hasn't been a problem. There hasn't been a, you know, get out the vote for Wanda, like stuffing of the ballot or anything like that. And that's kind of why the executive committee exists, is to balance that kind of thing off so that, you know, someone who balance it out is what I meant. So someone who isn't worthy can't just be like pushed in by one prankster.
Yeah. Now this might be a little controversial, Gordon. I have something that a lot of people may not agree with this, but
all right.
hear me out. I think that the inducted members of the Survivor Hall of Fame should not have a vote.
Oh.
I think they should not be on the executive committee.
Okay, and your reasoning is?
Because I would say, with the exception of, well, let me give you the, you know, the eight people that are in the Survivor Hall of Fame. I could tell you that there are many of them that I would not qualify as great Survivor fans, seen all the seasons, never miss an episode. I think there's a couple of people. I'll single Sandra out, is a super fan. Sandra, you know, is somebody who started watching the show way back when. I'm not gonna name names, but I think that there are that there are some people that are inducted that don't know anybody from Survivor besides the people that were on their seasons.
Interesting.
And I
see,
think,
but, I mean, that's a very valid argument.
Let's go to baseball.
Are you just saying people? So okay, so you know, Russell Hantz got some grief last season because he voted for Natalie Tenorello.
No, he voted for it's your Hall of Fame, Gordon. He voted.
What did I tell you? I have
Stephanie Valencia.
This is the running joke with me. I don't remember what I had for lunch. I have this awful Swiss cheese brain, which is why I don't play Survivor Jeopardy.
Yeah. Stephanie Valencia, Russell voted for.
Yes, I believe, you know, again, it's a balancing system where, you know, hopefully the people that you feel are more qualified, you know, Natalie Tenorelli is probably not going to be in the class of 2012. I don't want to tip my hand, but it's probably a safe bet.
Yeah. But that being said, I mean, in baseball, I mean, this isn't the Pro Bowl voting. This is the Hall of Fame. And so they don't ask the current baseball players who should be in the Hall of Fame. That's left up to the sports writers, the people who follow the sport for all, you know, through all of its entirety, who go to all the games, who have some historical perspective on all of this. That's why I do not think that the current players, you know, as good as they may or may not be, should have a vote on who should be in the Hall of Fame, because I don't think that you can separate something that you did and, you know, really tell who are the other historically good people at what you are good at.
Now, do you think that there's been some kind of, you know, behind the scenes manipulations, you know, trying to coerce voters into different ways? Is that...
You know, this sort of came up a little bit on my podcast with Jeff Probst, where it was sort of like people got on me a little bit because Jeff Probst asked me, well, who do you think we should bring back? And I didn't have an answer right off the top of my head. I wasn't expecting Jeff to ask me in that conversation, who should I bring back? And so some people accused me of, oh, well, I didn't, because I didn't want my friends to be mad at me about who I, you know, if I said this person should go back and this, like, other people would be mad at me. But I do think that it would be a thing that, to nominate, okay, who should be in the Survivor Hall of Fame? Like, I do feel like you would see other survivors and they would be kind of like, so you thought this person is better than me? You didn't think that I was better? So I do think there is some peer pressure, I would say, within the Survivor community. And it's just, you know, a whole situation that's rife with things that could go wrong, whether they haven't seen the previous shows or they're picking their friends. I don't think you can trust the reality stars, Gordon.
Okay. I'm just going based on the votes last year. I haven't seen all the votes for this year yet. There was only of all the ballots, all the executive committee ballots, and I believe there were 12 or 13 of them. The only vote where anybody was kind of raising an eyebrow was Russell Hantz's Natalie vote, which, I mean, you know, 1 out of 3 times 14 is 40 something. It's a pretty good percentage of what seemed like serious votes. It was the only one where people were like, I don't know about this one. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way it's been working out thus far. I feel like if it seemed like there were some kind of bizarre tampering, you know, where some odd name that didn't seem to fit in kept popping up, then maybe we would have to intercede, yeah. Which, you know, because the Survivor Hall of Fame carries just a great deal of weight
it does
the Survivor community,
carry
and I hate
to
have its legacy tarnished.
Yes.
Not unlike the Miss Survivor contest when I pulled myself from the judging because I was pulling for Andrea Bulkey. So, again, nothing, but I don't want this to be anything
right.
But the unapproachable as far as it comes to, you know,
and
truthfulness and fairness.
And, Gordon, I appreciate this sort of candor in how we determine Miss Survivor, and there will be some evolutionary changes when we do Miss Survivor this upcoming January. And Mr.
See, you get it. It's all a work in progress. Yes. It's all what's making it the most fun and the most fair. And, you know, what are people enjoying?
But Miss Survivor, I feel like, is almost the opposite of Survivor Hall of Fame. Miss Survivor, I'm going to cap it this year to only people who played Survivor in the year 2012. So I am only looking at the last two seasons. So this is more of a, I want the recency bias. This is the woman who best encapsulated Survivor in the year 2012. We're not going to go back all the way to the beginning. I don't need people. So I should have the Survivor Hall of Fame people judge the Miss Survivor pageant.
And then I can have the Miss Survivor contestants vote for the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So Troy Zan will be in the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. But very good, you know, good stuff, the Survivor Hall of Fame. It is fun. It creates a lot of discussion. I think that people are generally really excited about it. Glad that you're doing it. And I think it will only be, once we get the statues erected and the ground broken on the
All right. Well, riddle me this, Sestrinino.
Yeah.
Say this is your year.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Jeff Probst's vote. Once again, you're going to have my vote.
Oh.
If this is Rob Sestrinino's year to join the illustrious class of 2012, the Survivor Hall of Fame, are you going to forego your vote in 2013?
Yeah, I would. I would stand by. I wouldn't say. Now, the difference is between me and a lot of the others. So I would say, as a member of the Survivor media, I would be okay. One of the rare people who is like a professional athlete who then goes on to become a broadcaster, like a Phil Simms or something like that. And I think that that's a good analogy of, you know, of myself as a Survivor broadcaster after the fact. But I would abide by my own rules of okay. I should not get a vote. But I do think it should be. I would say there should be more people, more media members, more people that cover the show, less people who were on the show.
Well, I don't want to get anybody too excited with, you know, how the Hall of Fame voting is going. But for those who are inducted into the 2012 class of the Survivor Hall of Fame, you know, we give away like a little thank you gift, you know, for the people the executive voters. Thank you for their time. In 2010, it was a coffee mug. Parvati Shallow, I know, is very proud of hers. In 2011, it was a shot glass. Now, this is exclusive information. Oh. I'm giving just to you. I ordered them this morning. It will be Survivor water bottles. Very exciting. Right,
the aluminum water bottles? Is that?
That is correct.
Whoa, that's very fancy.
Well, the problem is, I send them to the voters, and I sent Dalton a coffee mug, and he goes, I don't drink coffee. Son of a bitch. Sent him a shot glass. He doesn't drink shots. So I'm like, oh, yeah. He drinks water, right? So hopefully this will work.
What happened to his Fox Reality Channel water bottle?
What's that?
That's what he tweeted a couple of weeks ago. He tweeted a picture of his Fox. He said the channel the channel doesn't exist, but I still have the water bottle. He's got to stay hydrated for all that swimming.
I know, the dolphin.
Yeah. Okay, well, good stuff. When will your announcements be for the Survivor Hall of Fame?
Oh, goodness, I don't have a calendar in front of me. What's today?
Today's the 26th.
No, wait, today's the 26th. It's the Monday before the finale. I guess we will induct the first person, then the Wednesday, then the Friday.
Okay, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That's good. Will you be keeping on the three people a year pace? Are you worried about watering down the Survivor Hall of Fame?
I actually had a conversation with this with the people at CBS PR, and for this season, I wanted to hold tight to it. I know that like the people are of many minds that some people think we're not doing enough. Some people think we're doing too many. Seeing the list of contenders this season, I think we're fine. I guess we'll have to address this maybe sometime next year, seeing as how the next two seasons go, but I think we might be getting close to reaching a saturation point where maybe take it down to two. But again, we'll see how things go.
See how it goes. All right, good stuff.
I feel like there are 12 to 15 strong contenders, people that if they got sent a water bottle, I would be happy about it. So I think we're fine for now.
Yeah, because after this season, what you'd have 11 in the Hall of Fame. So. Yes. Out of how many survivors? What, 400 something?
Yeah.
A good ratio. A good ratio. You wouldn't want to get to the point, you know, where in, you know, you have 23 in, you know, out of, well, how many more? It'd be like out of 600. I don't know. So it would start to get watered down, no pun intended.
The wrestling example I always use, it's like when they inducted Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame. It's like, all right, you guys, settle down. Too much.
Too much. The Birdman, not a fan.
Oh, no, he's a fantastic performer, but come on, Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get to very good. All right, so Gordon, I know we always like to wrap it up by talking a little community with you when we have you on the show. And so community has been it's been a great mystery ever since Dan Harmon got canned off the show, but it was coming back for a fourth season. Then it was going to start airing in October. But then NBC said, well, you know, let's wait a minute. And they were going to put it on Fridays, but now they're going to start it in January, we think?
I believe so.
January. And then the news broke this week that Chevy Chase will be leaving Community.
Yeah, man, it's hard times for Community fans. it was like I was at I was at home and my girlfriend said, you know, Chevy Chase is leaving Community, and I didn't feel anything, which is weird because I'm very passionate about the show. Like I have my show and I keep it on the DVR and I have all the DVDs. And when I'm, you know, when I'm writing, I'll have it on in the background. And Community is that show for me now. And it's just been gone so long that it's, you know, it's almost feels like it doesn't exist anymore. So they released, you know, it was originally supposed to come back in October and they released a funny video when it got pushed back. And it was kind of weird seeing all these actors on this set that you used to enjoy so much. So I really don't know what to think anymore. Like, you know, Chevy Chase, my understanding is that, you know, they did a lot. They filmed a lot of his stuff, so it won't change things that much. But yeah, like having it come back in January and then, you know, watching a Halloween episode in February or however that's going to work out. It's just man, like, you know, in my household, the Christmas decorations go up the day after Thanksgiving. And I ordered the little figurines of their claymation figures from last season's Christmas episode. Just it's like the show doesn't even exist anymore. It's so bizarre. So
the darkest time.
I don't know about it, but you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah. What? I mean, why can't Chevy Chase get along with anybody? I mean, is Dan Harmon off the hook here a little bit with the Chevy Chase thing?
I think a good example of how Chevy Chase is viewed by people is, you know, how Comedy Central does their roasts, and you know, Bob Saget did his, and like everybody he'd ever worked with showed up because they love the guy. Chevy Chase did one years ago, and it was like the D-est of D-list people showed up. It was people like, and they kind of it stopped being funny and started being sad because, you know, the people on the dais kept making fun of it. So I just think he's somebody that, you know, read the SNL book. I don't remember what it's called, but you know, Bill Murray and him famously not getting along. I don't know, man. He's just somebody that apparently is tough to get along with.
Tough to get along with. So do we have high expectations for the new Community season? Do you think it will be the same?
I think it's a situation where the new producers might go out of the way to try so hard to capture what they had just so they don't lose what, you know, teeny tiny fan base they have. So I think they're going to try their best. I think people who are worried about it becoming too normal, you know, I think those fears will be proven wrong. I think they're going to try their best to, you know, recapture that Harmon magic. Whether or not they can do it, I guess we're going to have to find out someday.
And now, Gordon, can you handicap for me the chances of a Community season 5?
Oh goodness, I wouldn't know where to begin. Like, you know, the NBC comedies Go On did well. Animal Practice did not. I think Men with Kids didn't get a full season. Let's see, you know, 30 Rock is done. The Office is going to be done. Parks and Rec is doing okay. Whitney, you know, kind of always on the bubble. Up All Night is being turned into a 3-camera comedy. So I've gotten past the point of hoping Community does well. I'm hoping everything around it just does poorly so that they run out of options.
Okay.
That might be the best bet at this point.
That could be good. So we'll see. We'll keep a close eye on that and see what happens when it comes back. Are you coming out for the finale this season, Gordon?
We just said, am I coming out? And I was like, where's
this
going?
Whoa.
For the LA, I will not. You know, just because you know, the recaps, and my family's actually going to be in town for Christmas by then. So that's not going to work out, which is a shame because I really, really enjoyed the Philippines cast and would, of course, enjoy seeing them again. But, you know, I work in Philly, so maybe it's more likely that I'll get out to the 26th finale.
Okay, good stuff. And Gordon, are people still able to vote for the Survivor Hall of Fame?
Yes, the polls for the Survivor Hall of Fame are open until this Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Yes. Has there been any voter irregularity? Are people trying to block the vote in any way?
People, you know, try to make it so you have to have an official ID. That's not necessary. As long as you have a working email account, a working Twitter, a working Facebook, you can vote. There have been like some minor cases of ballot stuffing, but again, we didn't say you couldn't. So, again, it all seems to even itself out, so I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Okay. We'll see. All right, Gordon Holmes, always a pleasure for me and hopefully for the audience. We'll talk to you again soon, buddy. All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Gordon Holmes. Always fun to have him on the podcast. He's at Gordon Holmes on Twitter. He's really good with talking to people about Survivor on Twitter, so if you're not a follower, you should check him out and tell him what you think about this interview and talk to him about some Survivor. I know he's up for it. Anyway, let's talk about what is going on Rob Has a Website. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, well then tonight you are in for a treat because it is time for Survivor Jeopardy. I could not be more excited. I can't wait to finish editing this podcast so I can go back to doing my arts and crafts, getting ready for Survivor Jeopardy, which is exactly what any 34-year-old man should be doing. Arts and crafts, getting sound effects ready, getting ready to play Survivor Jeopardy tomorrow night. Colton, Dawson, Spencer, what is... Very, very excited because it is going to be a lot of fun. And I mentioned it earlier in the podcast with Gordon Holmes. If you want to check out episode one of my Amazon commentary with Jenna Maraska, you can listen to it for free. Yes, go ahead and go to Survivor 6 Commentary or click on the banner on the sidebar of robhasawebsite.com. You'll see it right there in the upper right-hand side. Go click on that. You can listen to a whole episode of our commentary for free. I've also got a YouTube clip on there so you can see what it's like if you want to check out commentary from season 6. So plenty more podcasting to come. We're going to do Survivor Know-It-Alls come Wednesday night. Talk to the next person kicked off Survivor. You know the drill. It's week 11 of Survivor coming up. We all know how this works. Lots of fun on the way. Survivor Jeopardy, Survivor, who could ask for more? It's going to be a December to remember on Rob Has a Podcast. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.